natural thing in the world, isn't it? It can be a surprise to have to learn and to discover that breastfeeding is in need of support and encouragement.
This is absolutely true. I think it's recognized both in informal culture and certainly in all parts of the world that breastfeeding faces tremendous challenges.
David Parker is Deputy Director and Head of Research at the Inner Fertility Center.
I should say as well that just last November, an occasion to review progress and identify some of these challenges, and a celebration called Inner Gentle Growth is Deep was held. Exactly to try to understand why couples remain still so limited in many cases. What I can say by way of background may be that when you speak of breastfeeding, what you have to break in, when you learn from culture, what it all comes to is that exclusive breastfeeding for 6 months, and then partial breastfeeding with complementary feeding for 2 years is overall the type of standard that is optimal for infants.
So when I thought that in my family breastfeeding was considered the most natural thing in the world, I apparently touched on one of the roots of the issue. Fiona Sanchez, a leader for the Nature League in Italy, certainly thinks so.
Unfortunately, at least in our Western culture, it's not so common to see women breastfeeding as it is in other cultures. Watching our mothers breastfeed our siblings or our aunts breastfeeding, and our grandmothers would have talked about their experiences as well, and all this information gets passed on generation to generation, and we grow up seeing it and accepting it as what's normal, and we learn that way, and unfortunately we haven't had that experience, most of us, and so there is a need for more information and more support.
First things first, what is the Inner Twenty Centre where David works, and what is Nature League?
We address a range of areas related to social and economic policies and children, nutrition, international standards for children.
Beijing, Dublin, London, and Paris. And finally, a dream and football song for National Day that shows young people just as many of us as they go to Manchester. And the football.
Argentina commemorate the 57th anniversary of these people's recovery to China. Part of the ceremony at China, Food and Dream, the exhibition features photos covering different fields, including politics, culture, and sport. Argentine Senator Jorge Milton Capitanich, who attended the opening ceremony, said his country highly values its relationship with China. La Molita Tina. The exhibition is the first opportunity a better friendship with China and its people. This is also why it's taking place in our national congress court, a place that represents our country and people well. China's ambassador, Yuna Zhang, said the exhibition series has become constant and great interest in China.
Az emberek még várnak valamit a választott vezetőiktől. Az emberek ugyanis várnak még valamit az egyébként még oly gyarló magyar politikusoktól is. És ez jól van így.
Tisztelt Hölgyeim és Uraim! A mai este, a mai nap során az emberek
egyértelműen kinyilvánították az akaratukat, és döntést hoztak három fontos, három súlyos kérdésben. Először is döntést hoztak arról, hogy ki vitte csődbe Magyarországot. Az ország közvélemény egyértelműen kimondta, hogy Magyarországot a Magyar Szocialista Párt és a Szabad Demokraták Szövetsége által létrehozott koalíció, illetve a koalíció által delegált kormány vitte csődbe. Az emberek azt is kimondták a mai nap során, hogy a szocialista szabaddemokrata kormány nem tartják alkalmasnak a hazánkat gyötrő válság megoldására. És azt is kimondták ma Magyarország polgárai, hogy a hivatalban lévő személy nem tartják alkalmasnak, hogy Magyarország miniszterelnöke legyen, úgyis mondhatnám, a hivatalban lévő miniszterelnököt Magyarország polgárai ma este leváltották. Ezért a magyar választópolgárok, a Fidesz Magyar Polgári Szövetség nevében nyomatékosan felszólítjuk a Magyar Szocialista Pártot, hogy ne próbáljon szembeszállni az emberek akaratával, és maradéktalanul hajtsa végre a választópolgárok döntését. Köszönöm, hogy meghallgattak, hajrá Magyarország, hajrá magyarok!
A helyszínt kapcsoljuk még Érszávi Andrást. Van valami hozzáfűzni való a körülményekről, a beszéd fogadtatásáról, mi itt fogunk beszélni, csak téged kérdeznek meg.
Egyetlen egy papírt adtak a sajtótájékoztatót az újságíróknak, jelentőség teljesen, és ez az egy ábra volt látható a Viktor mellett és mögött is. Ez a szavazott számok országosan százalékban, egyébként ez a fél tízes adatát mondott, ez már változott, hiszen a 34-es, itt 52%.
Alabas avec le Herbie Nichols Project, un enregistrement du Jazz Composers Collective, un groupe de jeunes musiciens new-yorkais, Frank Kimbrell au piano, Warren Horton à la trompette, Ted Nash et Michael Blake au saxophone, Wycliffe Gordon au trombone et Matt Wilson à la batterie. Notre titre produit par Palm Meadow Records. Pour en savoir plus sur ce projet, consultez le site www.palmmeadow-records.com. C'est www.palmmeadow-records.com. PALMETTO-RECORDS.com www.palmmeadow-records.com. Ben Allison, un compositeur qui s'inspire aussi des arts plastiques, le voici avec son groupe Medicine Wheel dans un hommage au photographe Man Ray. Le titre A Life in the Day of Man Ray.
Souveraineté et les droits humains, guerre. 116 pays du monde débattront de la manière de faire face ensemble à ces problèmes.
Au sommet des non-alignés,
à La Havane, du 11 au 16 septembre.
For joining us this Sunday, October 1st.
With your host, I'm Thelma Rodriguez.
And over the next 60 minutes, we'll bring you a focus on one of the main attractions at the Cuban stand of the 19th International Book Fair held in Moscow, the book Confidential Poems by Antonio Guerrero, one of the five Cuban political prisoners in the United States. We'll also bring you the speech delivered by the head of state of Congo and current president of the African Union, Denis Sassou Nguesso, during the 14th Summit of Non-Aligned Countries that wound up in Havana on September 17th. We'll be answering your letters and email messages on the air on the Radio Havana Cuba Mailbag Show, and Arnie Cotto will join us for his science, technology, and the environment feature, Breakthrough. Stay with us.
Good evening. Welcome to another program of Weekly Review, a program where we take a look at the week's top news stories here on Radio Havana Cuba, hence the name Weekly Review, the week's top news. I'm Ed Newman, and I'll be doing this program for a while, I guess, here by myself. But that's all right, because I have you, the listener, out there taking notes. Let's take a look at one of the main stories we covered this week on Radio Havana Cuba, a startling news headline to me and to many, I think. The U.S. sends warships to the Persian Gulf. This was a story that broke on Monday. We reported it on Tuesday on Radio Havana. Major media sources reporting the advanced deployments of U.S. warships and weapons toward the Persian Gulf, pointing to what many believe could be preparations for launching a preemptive military strike against the Islamic Republic of Iran. According to reports from various sources, the Pentagon has moved up the deployment of a major strike group of ships, including the nuclear aircraft carrier, the USS Eisenhower, as well as a cruiser, destroyer, a frigate, a submarine escort, and supply ship, all heading for the Persian Gulf, just off of Iran's western coast. The information followed a report in the current issue of Time magazine, both online and in print, that a group of ships capable of mining harbors has received orders to be ready to sail for the Persian Gulf by October the 1st. That's this weekend, Sunday. As Time writes in its cover story, what would war look like? Evidence of the forward deployment of minesweepers would mean that there's a very real possibility that they're planning on using them. And according to The Nation magazine, the USS Eisenhower has also been sent to the Persian Gulf. It has been in port at the Naval Station in Norfolk, Virginia for several years for refurbishing, refueling of its nuclear reactor. It is a nuclear aircraft carrier, and it had not been scheduled to depart for any new duty station until at least next month and possibly until next spring. Family members of the sailors and the people on the USS Eisenhower had moved into the area, and they had expected to be with their sailor spouses and parents in Virginia for some time. First word of the early dispatch of the Ike strike group, the Eisenhower strike group, to the Persian Gulf came from several angry officers on the ships involved who contacted anti-war critics, like retired Air Force Colonel Sam Gardiner, and complained that they were being sent to attack Iran without any orders from the U.S. Congress. Colonel Gardiner, a retired Air Force colonel who taught military strategy at the National War College, said that the carrier deployment and scheduled Persian Gulf arrival date of October the 21st is what he calls very important evidence of war planning. He said that he knows of some naval forces that have already received prepare to deploy orders, and they have been set for their date as October the 21st to arrive in the Gulf region just off the coast of Iran. So we'll be watching that story. I'm sure that this will be a major news story as more information comes out on this U.S. warships being sent to the Persian Gulf in advance of what may very well be a preemptive strike against Iran by the United States. Let's take a look at another news story we covered this week. The United Nations condemned a U.S. plan for the interrogation of prisoners. United Nations investigators have said that legislation proposed by U.S. President George W. Bush for tough interrogations, actually torture, of foreign terrorist suspects would breach the Geneva Convention. In a statement to the U.N. Human Rights Council, five independent envoys of the United Nations said that Washington's admission of secret detention centers abroad pointed to very serious human rights violations. They again called for the closure of the U.S. detention facility at Guantanamo Bay, located in eastern Cuba and illegally occupied by the United States, where hundreds of prisoners are being held. Human rights groups said that there are continued violations of international law on torture and arbitrary detention. The UN envoys, human rights experts all, said that the United States, in trying to come up with legislation that would allow for, quote, tough interrogations, abuse, and actual torture of prisoners, is a violation of the Geneva Convention. Tune to Radio Havana, Cuba, and your dial is set right here on the international frequencies where we're offering for you now the weekly review program, heard every Friday and Sunday on Radio Havana, Cuba. It's where we review the top news stories of the past week. Another news story we covered this week on Radio Havana, Cuba: the United States Congress approved this week $70 billion for wars of aggression against Iraq and Afghanistan. The U.S. House of Representatives approved that on, I believe it was on Wednesday. The vote on the Pentagon Appropriations Bill was 394-22, approving not only $70 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan alone, but a record $448 billion budget for the U.S. military machine. And with military operations in Iraq costing about $2 billion a week, almost $8 billion a month, sources on Capitol Hill say that another infusion of money will be needed by next spring, if not before. According to the Washington Post, the House-Senate compromise bill that was passed this week provides $378 billion for basic Pentagon programs. It's about a 5% increase, though not quite as much as President George W. Bush had asked for. The $70 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan is essentially a down payment on war costs that the White House has estimated will hit $110 billion for the budget year beginning October the 1st. Newspaper headlines said this week that the final passage of the legislation, that with the final passage of the legislation, the U.S. Congress will have approved $507 billion for Iraq, Afghanistan, and security at foreign military bases over the past 5 years. The Los Angeles Times called the newly passed measure a mammoth Defense Appropriations Bill. And another news story we covered this week here on Radio Havana, Cuba. An airstrike on Gaza's only power station several months ago has left most residents now without their normal electricity supply, and it's being called a war crime, according to an Israeli human rights group.
Successively to become games for bloodthirsty onlookers as they were forced to kill each other or become the meat, living meat, of wild animals. Who's a barbarian?
Campanhas educativas e uma série de outras ações que ficaram ao largo desse processo, né? A violência entra na agenda e ela passa para a discussão e depois ela sai da agenda com a mesma velocidade.
Agora, professor, um outro dado importante é o seguinte, existe alguma definição, por exemplo, de recursos mínimos? Quer dizer, se vê, por exemplo, uma luta muito grande do setor de educação querendo recursos mínimos da Constituição, que o Estado seja obrigado a aplicar uma parte definida de suas receitas na educação e na saúde. Quando se fala em segurança, e se nós, no interior do Brasil, nos últimos 20 anos, essa questão acirrou muito, principalmente nas maiores cidades brasileiras.
Sem dúvida.
Ainda não há uma consciência da necessidade de um nível ideal de investimento em segurança?
Não há. E eu acho também que não é uma medida muito salutar você definir o mínimo específico na segurança, porque a segurança é conjuntural. Ela vai depender muito da influência de ações externas, da mobilização do crime organizado. Você não pode fazer uma previsão